This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at OnePeloton.com.
Hello. My name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hey, hello, how are you? Welcome to episode 130 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Got a cheeky little bonus episode for you today, and it's no other than street artist Paul Stone, aka My Dog Size. And that's My Dog Size, not to be confused with My Dog's Eyes, but only an idiot would get confused with that, right? But before we go on to speak to My Dog Size, firstly, the Patreon supporters, thank you very much for your support. This podcast could not be produced without them. And if you like what you hear and you think you might be able to support us for as little as £3 a month, you can do it on our Patreon page. Just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll see a LinkedIn drop-down box, and that'll direct you over to the Patreon page. And if not, this content's free for everyone anyway. But back to today's episode. I was lucky enough to squeeze half hour or so out of My Dog Size's super busy schedule, because when we spoke, Paul was just putting the finishing touches to an enormous installation called Inside, We Shelter Here Sometimes, in an abandoned casino and ballroom in Portsmouth. Let me just read a little bit of text about My Dog Size and his project Inside. After 10 years of giving his art away for free as part of the now infamous Free Art Friday project, My Dog Size has this year finally found himself strapped into a well-deserved meteoric rise, with an incredible international following from Israel, Japan, and of course the UK. 5 sold-out shows under his belt and a strong following of staunchly loyal fans on social media. My Dog Size is fast becoming an important figure on the contemporary art scene. Speaking of his latest project, My Dog Size says, "This is my most ambitious project to date, spending over a year transforming a derelict building into an immersive world inhabited by my quiet little voices. When I first stumbled into street art, the artists were often perceived as ghosts, with only the results of their endeavours visible to the world. With this project, I take my quiet little voices and shift the narrative of what is understood as My Dog Size. No longer is My Dog Size the scruffy guy with a bedraggled mohawk, the artist you thought, but by entering Inside, you're able to catch a glimpse of a new, alternative world. Inside, We Shelter Here Sometimes, is running from Saturday the 12th of July until the 1st of August, And you can get the tickets over on mydogsize.co.uk or on Eventbrite. But tickets are limited, so don't drag your heels. You're going to love My Dog Size. He's a top guy. But come and find it out for yourself, as I spoke to him over Zoom.
Putting a show together in general is always a little bit crazy. It always feels a little bit last minute. But when the project has been running for as long as this, so it's 18 months in the development for this one. It wasn't supposed to be. COVID's thrown a, you know, as it's for everyone, right? It's only supposed to be a 5-month project, supposed to open last October. Life for everyone has changed. So I thought, well, I'm not traveling, I'm not getting anywhere. Let's make this project bigger. We can't get anybody in at the moment, so let's just push the date forwards and then work. So it's become a beast of a show. Yeah.
Wow.
Bigger than anything ever I've done before, that's for sure.
And did you have to find the finances for it yourself, or?
Yeah, another great COVID story. So we approached the Arts Council right back at the beginning. I got a project manager on board to help me. We approached the Arts Council and they'd all but agreed to give us £250,000 to make this project happen.
Nice.
So it's a massive, massive abandoned derelict building. So a lot of work needed to be done to make the building safe for the public to get in. So we needed this chunk of funds. And we walked out of these meetings absolutely flying. The Arts Council were going to give us a load. Other private businesses and organisations and arts organisations were all on board. And then COVID hit. And then the Arts Council said, we need to keep the galleries and museums open. No more funding. And so and in 1 week, we lost the lot. Absolutely every penny.
Oh, man.
I got to that point and I was so emotionally invested. I'd already been working for 2 or 3 months on it as a project. I just couldn't let it lie. I couldn't not run it. You know, it was just in me that I had to finish it in some form. So we went through a whole bunch of guises. At one point, we were going to do it and never open it up to the public. It was going to be a ghost exhibition, and we were just going to make a film and a book about it. We tried to get some funding to turn it into a VR experience, and that fell through, so we didn't get there. So I got a really fantastic fan group. And so I did a crowdfunder and they helped raise 50K towards it, which was absolutely fantastic. Really, really good. And I told them nothing. I just said, I'm doing something really, really cool. I can't tell you what it is, but honestly, it's going to be mental. And then got some good rewards in. So everybody got something out of it. You know, it wasn't just throwing money in and not knowing anything. And then the rest I've just had to dig deep and work hard and hope that I can sell a few T-shirts and prints and artwork.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Cover my costs on the back.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great that, great that these people are jumping on board, isn't it?
So fantastic, you know, to have people that will believe in something like that and, help me try and make my dream come true is pretty awesome, yeah.
And that's, when's it showing from and until?
So we open next Friday, that's 16th of July. That's a private view. And then we run through until the 1st of August. So it's a bit crazy, isn't it? 16 days I'm open for. So it's taken me 18 months to get ready.
Oh, man. It's one of those things, isn't it?
But, as a street artist, and that's my background, really, street art's ephemeral. It never lasts. And if it did last forever, it would get really boring and nobody would want to look at it anymore. So I kind of see the show as a little bit like that. You know, you put something on that's really, really exciting. People get to see it. You try and document it in some way, shape or form. And then it, you know, the doors close, the building gets knocked down or whatever happens to it. And it disappears and it's gone. So I kind of like that, I kind of like that ephemeral nature. Yeah.
When I first saw your work a couple of years ago, a friend of mine, Ben Oakley, has got a gallery in Greenwich. And I see a few of your cans in
In fact, Ben came down yesterday because his son's in uni down here.
How is he?
So he came to pick him up and he got a sneak peek of the show. So he did a walk around yesterday. But yeah, he's a nice time. We've got plenty of time for Ben. He's a good guy. One of the good guys in the game.
Well, I don't suppose you saw his interactive show that he'd done with Giles Walker, did you?
God, I didn't get up to see it, but he sent me a link to it.
It looked amazing.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And any photographs and videos wouldn't do it any justice because the atmosphere that was in there, it was quite a dark and mysterious thing to be a part of. Yeah, it was brilliant.
And we were talking about the difficulty of trying to pull that off, because that was in December time, wasn't it? So he was really in between lockdowns and the craziness and stuff that was going on there. And, you know, we were sharing stories of, you know, how tricky it was to try and arrange something like that.
And parallel to yours, his was meant to be a bigger deal. And, you know, again, funding stopped and other people pulled out and not broke promises, but, you know, just
situations, things
get in the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I first saw your work in his gallery, I asked who done these cans, and he said, "My dog size." It was quite a while before I discovered that it was my dog size and not my dog's eyes.
You're not the first one, mate. Yeah. The thing is, the name came way before the eyes. I've had features in newspapers where they call me my dog's eyes for the entire time. So it's one of those things, right? You just have to learn.
It's the same as Psycho the Rapist being a psychotherapist.
Maybe not quite the same, but I know what you mean. Yeah. Doesn't work. Yeah.
I have on this podcast, Paul. I have 7 questions that I ask each artist that I will throw in. Every now and then that you may not even notice. But the first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
I kind of have what I think of as a few strands. So my heart and my passion lies with creating work on the street, whether that's sticker or paste-up or illegal walls or legal walls.
Yeah.
So I'm a street artist first. Off the back of that, I'm also a mural artist, and I think the scene has changed dramatically. So you know, it used to be street art, everyone was ghosts. You never saw who they were. You just saw their work appear. And then the kind of street art festival started and you started painting and then people came and take pictures of you.
And then money came into
the game and you've got all that. So, you know, I do play that game too. So I do my street art stuff for shits and giggles. I paint at mural festivals and that brings me some income in. And then, you know, there has been a real change over the last few years in the way that galleries work and urban contemporary or street art galleries. You know, it's about how those street artists bring that work into a gallery space. So up until now, those have been the kind of the angles that I've taken as an artist. With this project, it's about trying to blur some of those. So I am doing a project inside. So I suppose it's a bit like an exhibition rather than just a painting on the wall. But it was purposely chosen to be a derelict building, because the thing that I love when I work on the street is the urban decay. It's that real aesthetic of peeling paint and rust and forgotten places, you know, places that have been lost, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm really passionate and really enjoy working.
And done well, that bit of new, fresh art, you know, juxtaposed to this old building, you know, because they shouldn't work together. But when a new artwork is set on there, it's it can be something of beauty, can't it?
Yeah. And equally, there are artists that do a really fantastic job taking a derelict building that's falling down and add something that looks like it's been there for 100 years. You know, it hasn't. Yeah. So it's not super fresh and clean. It's got that kind of age and that kind of history to it, that narrative to it that I really enjoy as well. So, I love playing with all those kind of elements of urban decay. So to take over the space that I have, which was just a massive, it's a massive old casino and ballroom. Wow. And the casino shut down about 10 years ago, but the ballroom shut down about 40 years ago. Wow. And they literally bricked up the staircase and left it. Nice. And I managed to get access in there. The owner gave me the keys and said, have a look, you know, see what you think. And I poked my head through this tiny hole in the wall and saw this staircase, and it was jet black. I had a little torch, sort of clambered through this hole in the wall, walked into this most incredible ballroom. It's just stunning. I mean,
was any of the beauty still there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or had the damp got hold of it?
Beautiful art ceiling, the columns on the walls. There were some sculptures that the kids has kind of pushed over and smashed.
So we
stood those back up again. And there's that kind of that balance of beautiful kind of 1930s, 40s architecture with broken glass and smashed up. Just a dream, absolute dream space. Yeah.
Well, I was just in an exhibition with, there was over 100 artists, but that was in the Fulham Town Hall.
Okay.
And that's a 1930s building.
Mm.
And I was down, funnily enough, I'm a fine artist, and I was down with the urban artist, graffiti artist, down right. in the basement. We was all in the cellars there. And as I referred to them, I was amongst the riffraff. is how I was explaining to the other guys down there.
But everyone's down there drinking beer while the people upstairs are drinking wine.
Exactly. Like, well, as you can hear, I'm a beer drinker rather than a wine drinker. You know, I'm a bit misplaced. Did you always have art at home growing up?
Yeah, as a kid, the packet of felt tip pens was the best present in Santa's stocking.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I think a lot of artists are the, you know, have that same thing. I wasn't a fast runner or a football player, but you know, I could copy cartoons and I could use a felt tip pen. And
yeah,
you know, I wasn't afraid to colour outside the lines on those colouring in books. You know, just mucking around. And I think as I grew up, you know, in the 80s, it was leather jackets and will you paint this band cover on my leather jacket?
Of course,
and
so, yeah.
You know, I was that guy that called for that. In the 90s, the rave thing started in the illegal parties. So it was all UV paint and, you know, mad psychedelic stuff. So I've always had that kind of creative thing. My dad was right. Okay, that's all good that you enjoy painting, but you got to get a proper job.
Proper job.
So, yeah. You know, he's laughing now because, you know, this is what I do for a living. This is my job. So I went into teaching. And so I kind of kept the creativity side of stuff. So I used to teach art in schools. And I worked in schools for about 20 years. And you know, really enjoyed
it. In Pompey, in Portsmouth.
In South London and in Portsmouth and Hampshire, yeah. And the painting was always shits and giggles, you know, it was the hobby, it was the thing you did to let off steam in the evening after a day at work, you know, all those sorts of things. I got lucky. The cans were seen by some galleries and so the culture show picked up on a project that I was doing and then did a little feature on that. That got me in front of some right people. And then I sort of slowly transitioned from being a teacher into being an artist. And I've been painting full-time.
And was there a definite split or did one merge into the other?
Definitely one merged into the other, yeah. Yeah, I was teaching and painting. You know, I was still teaching full-time when I had my first solo show with Charlie at Pure Evil Gallery. And then when the invites came for shows and I was still trying to teach full time. The balance just wasn't there. So I'd reduced my hours teaching. Then I had a big show over in West London, went to the head teacher and said, look, I need a sabbatical. I need a term off so I can focus on this show. And that happened. And I met up with her afterwards and she said, yeah, you're not coming back, are you?
Yeah, that term's going to extend. Yeah, you've now been expelled.
Yeah, very much so. I was like, well, if it all goes tits up, please can I come back? But yeah. You know, I'm lucky enough that it's been a good journey and I'm still here.
Yeah, well, I hear that on here quite often, that people who have merged into being an artist, they do exactly that, and it gets to a point where they're doing sort of 50-50.
Yeah.
And their job starts to get in the way, you know.
That's when you know it's the right time, isn't it? You know, I also know people that give up everything and decide they're going to be an artist full time. And actually that jump is a really, really big one. And if you're going to try and pay your rent and, you know, buy shoes for the kids and feed yourself, to make it as a sudden jump can sometimes put a lot of people off and make it really difficult. And, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with running a job that earns an income alongside you starting off your art career. And I'd always say to people, you know, there is nothing wrong, you know, about that.
That's no, I only decided to do that maybe 2 years ago myself. But that situation, I was doing another podcast with a portrait artist called Jeffrey Harrison a few weeks ago. And we was talking about that similar sort of thing. He works and, you know, paints sort of up, not on the side, but, you know, parallel rather.
He splits it, yeah.
He was saying that when he was at art school, one of the tutors, for whatever reason, and they still do it now, they say that only 3% of you guys will go on to use art as your income.
Mm.
So, you know, I said, well, I'm proud to be a 97%er, you know. I'm glad to be one of them other ones. And when it came out on the podcast, loads of other people contacted me about being a 97%er, and we ended up making little badges up, you know.
I love that. Yeah. I feel excluded from the club. No.
To get out of it, I charged £3 for these little badges, the 97%ers.
Right.
And then I had other artists who listened to the show contact me and say, well, what about us? Can we have a badge? So I made the 3%er badge, but yeah. I charged £4 for them because they're earning.
Love it, that's brilliant.
A little twist and a little sort of fingers up to the artists that have done what I've not yet achieved, you
know. I love that. That's amazing. I'll give you a fiver for one.
I'll send you one gladly later on. What piece that you've created, Paul, holds the biggest emotional connection, do you think?
The next one. Because every painting you do, there are things that you love about it and there are things that you hate about it. You don't tell anybody what you hate, but you celebrate the things that you love. And then that inspires you on the next one to carry on the things that you really enjoyed about painting that first one. And then the things that you didn't like, that's what you work on. That's the thing.
That's your niggle.
That's your challenge. That's your problem solving that you work through and you find a way of getting there. We are never 100% happy with what we produce. If we were, we'd put our paintbrushes down and we would never paint again because there would be no point, right? But there's always the strive to improve and to get better. And, you know, that balance of things you like and things you don't like shifts sometimes, but that is always there. And so it's always, you know, the kids ask me, you know, I do a lot of education sort of based stuff. And the kids always say, what's the best painting you ever painted? And I give the same answer. And it's really, it's just such, they hate it. They want to tell you it's that one there. And you point at the wall. And you can't do it. You know, there are pieces that I've sold and really regretted selling. Things that kind of, that were like a diving board onto something bigger and better. Yeah. And you know, there are those memorable pieces throughout my career for sure. But I'm always excited about getting onto the next thing because it's that next one that might be even better than the one before.
Well, each one is, whether it be good or bad, is a link in the chain to where you're going, next.
And that's what an exhibition is, isn't it? It's a punctuation in where you are in your career. Yeah.
How about relaxing, Paul? What do you do to relax?
Well, it's a funny one because art was always my hobby. I had my day job and then I would paint in the evenings and I'd paint at the weekends and I'd paint in my free time. I mean, when that shifted and I went to the studio every day and I painted all day and every day, for about 5 years, I would come home of the evening, sick to death of paint. You know, I'd had enough of it. I couldn't do it anymore. And I was really lost. I was really unsure about what my downtime would be because it was always art. And then it suddenly wasn't. It was, you know, I was painting all day, every day. And actually, I think it probably lockdown that caused it. I've become a massive houseplant addict.
Brilliant. So, I can see a few in the background.
Look, this is my son's bedroom because there's the best Wi-Fi in here, but the entire house is like a massive jungle. But what's really lovely is that for a few hours every week, I can do nothing other than just, you know, are they fed? Are they watered? So give them a little trim, give them a little sort. And it's a real meditation. I mean, it's just, I can't think of anything else. I don't want to think of anything else. And it's a really fantastic way to clear my head. So my wife's like, not another one when I bring the next one. It is literally a jungle. We have to climb through parts of the house. But it's definitely saved, you know, it's definitely been a kind of mental health thing to be involved in.
And as you said there, lockdown that pushed a lot of people to do that creative something that they'd always not had time to do.
Absolutely. What do they say at the beginning? There's loads of memes at the beginning, wasn't there? You know, if you were going to learn Italian or learn to play the
that's
guitar,
it
now is the time to do it because you've got no excuses. And so I think part of my, you know, this project, this inside project I've been working on, I'd never sculpted before at all. And so it was like, well, okay, I'm not traveling. I'm not going to go and paint in America 3 or 4 times. I'm not traveling around the world because that's not happening anymore. Let's pick up some new skills. Yeah. Really crazy things. Like I went on a willow weaving workshop.
Brilliant.
Just for the hell of it. Why not? You know, it's sculptural form in an organic way. And I've, you know, been able to include elements of kind of weaving within the project and, you know, I've learned to sculpt on tiny scale and 8 foot, 9 foot scale. And so, it was like, well, yeah, I have used lockdown to learn some new skills, and that, you know, I'm pleased with that.
Yeah, put another tool in your toolbox.
Yeah, exactly, right? And we carry that toolbox around with us, and we pull it out and use it, and we use, you know, the more you've got to pull out, the more variety and excitement you've got.
It won't ever get too heavy either, will it?
No.
You said that you would be painting a lot, you know, years ago. What was it before graffiti entered your world?
Anything and everything, like, you know, the rave backdrops, all the sort of psychedelic stuff that went along with that, you know, a lot of band.
So it was pretty much graffiti stuff, but just not in the graffiti sense.
Yeah, I mean, I remember graffiti hitting the UK in the 80s, but I was, you know, 10, 11. And so it was exercise book things. You know, I got my graffiti name, but I was never quite brave enough to pick up a spray can.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually hit the whole, you know, painting walls with spray cans until a bit later in my life, until I was about 30. But I'd always had a paintbrush. You know, I'd always been creating and in some form, form or another. I'd been running street art projects, but using paintbrushes to paint things, the cans and all that sort of stuff. And then I'd met other street artists and they were like, why aren't you painting walls? You know, why aren't you using spray paint? And so there's an artist in Portsmouth called Fark FK. And it must have been 15 years ago. You know, he came up to me and said, you know, we're going down to Bristol to paint a big paint festival down there. Why don't you come and paint? And I was like, well, I use little paintbrushes and I paint tiny little things. And, you know, I don't do walls. But he persuaded me. He was like, you know, here's a spray can, you know, play with this, see what you can do with it. And then, I just didn't look back. As a material, it's a bit like oils in that it's a pig to work with. When you start with, it's not natural. And you've got to learn how, you know, it's like this battle with it. You know, you battle against it and it battles against you. And then eventually, after a period of time, you come to some agreement with it. I'm going to try and do this. Just let me do this, please. Yeah. And then
enthusiasm turns to frustration rather quickly.
Yeah, it so does, doesn't it? But it's that 10,000 hour thing, right? You know, you've got to just keep going. Yeah. You've got to, you know, if that's the material that you want to use, you just have to hack and hack and hack and be really, really bad. You've got to be a toy for, you know, years and years and years. And at some point, you're going to find your style and you're going to find your subject matter and those things are going to click into place. And it takes a while, but yeah.
Our previous guest on here, friend Jacqueline de Montaigne. She is in Portugal. She does large wall murals like your own, you know, on a crane, but she predominantly still uses brush.
Yeah.
Just not a little fine artist brush.
Double O brush, yeah. And what's strange about the street art scene now is that a lot of artists that would have been using spray paint are now moving over to...
I've seen a few, I was quite surprised.
Yeah, and it creates a beautiful, you know, really beautiful, you know, like an oil painting, but you know, four stories up. It's just, really, really incredible. Yeah, it is interesting. When I first started, it was like, you're not allowed to use anything other than spray paint. You know,
of course.
You're either stencil artists or graffiti artists, and, you know, I'd arrive with a paintbrush and they'd kind of look down their noses at me. But yeah, the scene has definitely changed.
The show you're in at the moment, what's the title of that show that you're about to open?
So it's called Inside, and because I can, I've given it a subheading.
And why not?
Who's going to tell me I can't?
Of course.
And so Inside is called We Shelter Here Sometimes. So as an artist that's used to working outside on the street, as a street artist, it kind of had that play of, well, I'm not outside. I am working inside a space, but equally, we spent 18 months inside, right? You know, I'm telling you that you spent longer than that inside, right? But you know, we've been cooped up and we've had to reassess our lives. We've had to reassess what's important to us and then how we deal with different situations. And I was dealing with that while also building the project. So it has a play on multi layers. It is that idea that you're an artist that you're used to seeing outside has moved into a space. It's about how we deal with the claustrophobia or the, you know, the fear of being outside and all those elements that go alongside it. And actually, the kind of narrative of the show itself is this group of characters, which I call my quiet little voices.
Nice.
And they have taken over this space. They are living inside. They've kind of squatted this ballroom that's been empty for 50 years. And so they live in there and they dance and they joke and they're sad and they're parents and they're lovers and they paint things and create things and they're musical and they write things. And so it's kind of all those elements of the human existence, you know, all of the elements of us, of me as an artist, but as everybody, in separate character forms, sharing this space as a community. So that's where the kind of that the title of the inside sort of ties it all together.
And what sort of artworks are in there? Is it just graffiti and small sculptural work?
We've got sculptures as big, I suppose, 12, 13 feet high. Oh, they're hanging from the ceiling. There's huge wooden pods that they live in.
Nice.
There is more traditional forms. So, I mean, there's lots of graffiti. There's lots of sort of painted images on the walls, as well as these sort of sculptures and things. But it's split over two floors, and then kind of the downstairs floor is more of a traditional gallery space, as much as you can in a derelict, derelict nightclub. Yeah. But there's artworks, there's a maze to explore that kind of represents the, you know, the confusing bit of my head, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of left, kind of right, changing directions, changing my mind. And so that maze kind of represents how my brain sorts of...
Brilliant. Function. And how can people get to see this project?
So you can see it in person if you can get to Portsmouth, and you can do that by going to my website, mydogsize.co.uk. All the details are there. But I have had a filmmaker follow me for the last 18 months, so documenting the entire journey.
Brilliant.
The plan is that we build a documentary about how you make an exhibition during COVID and how shit can go wrong sometimes.
Nice.
And then also I've had photographers who've been documenting the whole, from the building from when I first came in, all the way through the sort of construction, working in the studio, working in the casino. And then so the plan is, once the building shuts, we'll release a book so you can sort of catch the documentation.
Beautiful. Brilliant. And what's happening to the building? Do you know, once it closes?
I don't. The owner is sort of swinging between wanting to restore it but not finding the money. I'm sure it would be much more financial sense to raise it to the ground and build some anonymous flats. I really hope that doesn't happen, because it's a gorgeous building, absolutely gorgeous. And I know his heart's in the right place, so let me arrive and spend 18 months in there and do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah.
It's got to be a cool guy to do that, right?
Of course, really, of course. But the trouble with a ballroom being that it's one big room. You can't do much with one of those in the future.
The ballroom is one floor of four. Underneath the ballroom, there are two nightclubs and bars and restaurants and kitchens. Below that, there's a casino. So it is just a huge space.
Are they still in use at the moment, them
oven? No, they've been derelict for 40, 50 years. Yeah, wow. Just literally locked up and left, which is beautiful. Crazy. I've lived in Portsmouth for 25 years. I painted the outside of it without even considering what was in there.
Excellent.
And when I eventually got inside, it was just mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing.
And how cool is it that it's in your hometown as well?
I can cycle there in the morning. Yeah, absolutely. There's no way I could have run a project where I work 7 days a week, 10 hours a day for 18 months, unless it was where, you know, on my doorstep. If they invited me to come and do that in London or Manchester, I've got family, you know. It's the stars aligned absolutely beautifully. The building, the owner, the location, and it's to some extent lockdown helping me extend this project into something far bigger than it would have been before.
A little while ago, last year, we was both in a show together, being Background Bob.
Ah, yeah, what an amazing project, wasn't it?
Wasn't it beautiful?
Just incredible. So Nathan, Background Bob's dad, has been a sort of friend and collector for a while, and, you know, he was planting the seed, oh, I'm just going to contact a few artists and see if they could, you know, collaborate with Noah. And I was like, yeah, I'm down, I'll do a couple of pieces, and, you know, go from there. Little did anybody know how it would grow. So that massive book, the huge exhibition,
beautiful.
It was on every TV station. Every time I turned the telly on, there was, you know, it was the best feel-good. I mean, how proud did you feel?
Oh, man.
To actually be able to paint that piece.
I genuinely had tears in my eyes on several occasions.
Yeah.
Me and, like, me arty partner, Lee Ainsworth, we both, you know, happened to be a part of it. And, yeah, it was something really, really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, a legacy for Noah. It was incredible. I know they're beavering away on their second phase as well, which is quite phenomenal. So, yeah.
And
Noah,
Noah's
a great little chap. He came up to the studio a few years ago, and you know, you can't help but just, you know, his grin and his smile is just absolutely. Yeah.
He's got a smile that will melt the hearts of anyone, yeah. Wouldn't it?
As long as you swear in. Yeah, yeah. Any toilet humour and he grins like a Cheshire cat. It's fantastic. All you want for a 10-year-old boy. Yeah.
It was during that show that I realised that you wasn't my dog's eyes. Because I actually read the name rather than heard the name.
Yeah, rather than hearing it, yeah.
Paul, if you could create an exhibition with you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Jeez, five? Blimey, I get to ask, yeah, I can often ask who's your favourite, but five, right, okay. Let's get Andy Warhol in there because I just think that would be the craziest event. There would be sparks flying in all directions, which would just, yeah, really throw me. An American Israeli artist called No Hope, whose work I just absolutely adore. No, as in to know something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then Hope. His work is beautiful, absolutely stunning.
Is that a graffiti urban artist?
He definitely started out in that kind of street art game, for sure. Has moved much more into a contemporary field. But his work is,
I think, beautiful. Now I'll take a look.
Ah, yeah, very, very good. My heroes are a German duo called Herakut. So Herakut. So they're a guy and a girl, Hera and Akut.
Yeah.
They joined together a few years ago, and their work, what I love about them is Hera, she composes the imagery, which is very, very loose. She uses rollers on massive poles. There's dripping paint everywhere. Just this really real energy to it. And Akut is a photorealistic graffiti writer. So
nice.
He will create the shadow on the shoulders or the skin tone or the reflection in the eye. You know, these tiny, tiny bits of perfection. And that balance of looseness and perfection for me is just,
melts
my heart. Right. I'm going to throw Toasters into the mix. The Toasters were some of the pioneers in street art. So right back, way, way back in the beginning, they thought it'd be really funny to take the idea of a tag, right? You know, taggers go and write their name in as many places as they can. You know, you need to get up as much as you can. But rather than use a tag, they would take a picture of a toaster and they would turn that and they would put that toaster everywhere. And they have literally covered the world with the same image for 25 years or something.
Excellent.
Just a really standard illustration of a toaster, and they've blown it up. And I think that idea of taking the graffiti element of a tag, but with something so funny and banal as a toaster, but hammering it again and again and again and again and not letting it lie, is just the most wonderful thing for me. I love
and
that.
It creates its own aura, doesn't it?
Exactly. I have a pin, a Toaster's pin, and I had a show in Chicago a couple of years ago, and this Chicago guy, this gun and gangster guy, came up, "Hey, man, I love that band." You know, and it was just, you know, I didn't have the heart. You know, I was just like, yeah, that's cool. And I went and told Toasters later on, and they were just like, that's the best. That's, you know, people recognize it, but they don't know why they recognize it.
Yeah.
You know, that's really cool.
And where are they from?
All over. I think now in the Midlands. So there were originally three of them, Toasters A, Toasters B, and Toasters D. I think one of them is now active still. But they're kind of everywhere all the time.
Brilliant. Yeah. Love it.
Really, really good. Well, oh gosh, have we got time for any more? I don't know. Where do we go from here? Who else do I throw into the mix? The London Police.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, right, okay. Only because, as much as their work is just brilliantly simple and recognisable and lovely, I know the party, the after party and the pre-party and the getting ready party is going to be messy.
Are they good?
Really, really good fun. If you ever go out with Chaz from the London Police, right off the next 2 days, because
superb.
he loves his tequila and he knows his tequila, and it can be, yeah, it can be a tough one. But yeah, if you follow them on social media, the way that, so they're a kind of crew, and the way that they work, and they work in the studio, and they don't take it seriously. You know, yeah. they really enjoy what they do, and you know, we can get really stuck in what we do, and we can be very serious, and you know, the decisions that you make as an artist can be really, really hard work. And
yeah, passion's powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But to see them just revel in this kind of wonderful joy of what they do means that, yeah, I love them even more for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my knowledge of street art, urban art, graffiti is limited. But they are
perfect for that. Yeah.
They are one name that I followed early on.
Right.
And I could see a lot of that fun element in there, you know.
Yeah.
And as much as it was great work they were producing, you could see that there was a little bit of sarcasm and sniggering going on.
I want to be in their crew. I want to be their friend. Yeah.
What do you reckon you'd be if you wasn't an artist?
I love teaching. It was a great job. It was crazy, crazy hard. And the paperwork and the, you know, that was, I didn't enjoy that bit. But I love being in a classroom. I love being inspired by and inspiring young minds. I think, you know, the reward from that is quite incredible. I think, you know, if it all went tits up now and I had to step out of it, I'd step back into teaching again.
Nice.
And, you know, be surrounded by the kids.
Yeah, a friend of mine, or who I mentioned earlier, Lee, who's my arty partner, he's going back into it 3 days a week just as an art technician in a school in South London, in Peckham. Lastly, just if you could just tell us the name of your show you've got coming up, where people can see it, get tickets if tickets are needed.
So, yeah, we are navigating COVID and a derelict building. So there are limited numbers of places and people and times we can get people in. So we're doing kind of slots that we can get people along. Yeah. But we're open from the 16th of July to the 1st of August. You can get the tickets via my website, which is mydogsize.co.uk. All the information is there about where tickets are available, when they're sold out, how you can get a hold of them. Pretty much everything's available on the site. But the show's called Inside, and it would be really nice to invite people inside, you know. Brilliant.
Excellent. And for those that can't make it, there'll be something a little further down the line that
So we'll
have a flavour of the experience.
We'll get the book made, we'll get it out there, and I'll be spamming everybody on social media like I always like we all have to do, right? Part of the game. And
of course. Brilliant, Paul. That's all my questions asked. All the very best, and hope to bump into you soon.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Thanks very much. Nice to
best.
You.
See you later on, mate.
Bye-bye.
Ta-da. There you have it. Paul Stone, My Dog Size. Didn't I tell you he was a top guy? And as we said there, Inside, We Shelter Here Sometimes, opens this Saturday, the 17th of July, and runs until the 31st of August at the Old Casino in Southsea, Portsmouth. And even as I record this, I've just had a look on the Eventbrite page and nearly half the tickets have gone already. In this episode, My Dog Size and I spoke of a young lad called Background Bob. And along with several friends and family, Background Bob is very soon putting on his second enormous exhibition. And if you happen to be on social media at all today and want to see one of the biggest smiles on the internet, just look up Background Bob and give him a follow. If you would like one of these bonus episodes to promote your work, yourself as an artist, or an art event you've got going on, just contact us for prices and details. The Ministry of Arts states that it's probably the most inclusive art podcast in the world, and the cost of these bonus episodes reflects that. And if you've listened to just a couple of these episodes, you'll be aware that we're all about promoting artists no matter which rung of the ladder they're on. And you're safe in the knowledge that all of the proceeds go back into this podcast. Well, I'm back again on Monday with an episode recorded on location at the World's End on the King's Road. It was another one recorded face to face. I loved it. You can hear the traffic going by and everything, you know. But anyway, that's Monday. I'll see you then. Ta-da. Well, Hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.